I'm sorry, you don't understand the purpose of a right click on a computer.
You seem to have, as you wished, down a hill into a, what do you call a ravine that's unfathomable? Maybe like maybe you fell into an uncanny valley, you guys? Maybe you fell into one of those and you just live there now.
Yeah.
Dumb. Hey, applauders. Thanks for joining us at Shocked and Applaud. My name's Naomi McQuaid.
I'm Lydia Malcolm.
And I'm Jen McQuaid. And for some reason that we can't fathom, you have decided to click on the link.
Cats, 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 cats. Meow, meow. I'm a cat. I'm a cat.
Replace
I'm a cat.
The intro. Put that right in the movie. It needs to get like straight to film. Do it. You have 6 months. You guys, if you have been with us, you might have listened to our Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy episode, in which I asked Lydia if she's ever seen the movie Cats from 2019, which might be our most recent film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
and Lydia's like, no, because I knew that she liked the original musical. Oh, sorry. Also, okay, so I just paused to let the cat walk across all of the electronics, but what we've committed to is letting Pitch make all the interruptions she usually wants. So if you want to truly appreciate Jen's editing, this cat is going to be all over this episode. She's going to be, okay, so in honor of the movie Cats, we're going to let Pitch have free reign. I got some treats in front of me. I'll try to distract her, but there's no promises. So last episode, I challenged Lydia to watch Cats, the 2019 musical, and she took that challenge. She's taking it in her teeth and she's whipping it around.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was so committed to just absorbing this movie through cultural osmosis. That's like all of the Gizmodo articles that came out. all of the like YouTubers that I watched talking about this musical in like the peripheral, like Lindsay Ellis, the YouTuber that I probably talk the most about. She did a video essay about this movie. And Maggie Mayfish, a recent YouTuber that I've been following, she does a whole like hour's worth about how T.S. Eliot was like a fascist sympathizer.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, oh, wow, this movie is really contradictory to some of the things that he probably liked. It's a great watch. It's a really great watch. And also she dresses up as a cat.
And listeners, applauders, we all three of us are dressed up as cats right now.
Meow.
There's no way for you to know for real.
I am a grown woman who owns cat ears. Somebody should check on us. We're not all right. So let's start where we always start. How did we get here? I watched the special on PBS of the stage performance from the 80s, and it was edited, and I did not think there was a plot. As a child, I did not think there was one.
The thinnest of plots.
Yeah, just like a light smattering of like after plots. It's like afterthoughts, but after plots. It happens when you shoehorn like a narrative onto somebody else's like disjointed works. Jukebox musicals are notorious, but
this was probably like the, what is that? What is
OG jukebox?
Yeah. Sorry.
When music was called poetry.
Gather round, ye all, and I'll tell you a tale of a cat that's
tail was so tall. Oh, Pitch Kitten's gonna run all over this. I'm so excited. She's doing like lunges on the bed right now. She
commit.
Knows
it. Commit.
I mean, we talk about cats and kittens and she knows we're talking about her because we rarely use her name and we're just like, hey, kitten face. Hey, kitten. Yeah, she's bapping me right now. She's, yeah, she's wonderful. She's adorable. She's our little black cat. Son of a Pitch. Okay. So I watched the special. I bought the album, like a real LP. And then in 2019, everybody was complaining about this film. And I was like, Jen, you got to take me to see it. And then as we sat in the theater, I was like, what's happening? Jen, what's happening? We're like in a nearly empty theater in the top back row because I was like, well, if it's super bad, we'll just make out, right? You got to have a contingency plan. was so wrapped in it. I was like, Jen, I'm not on drugs. I don't get it. If I was on drugs, would I get it? And now watching it now, no, that doesn't help. Not that I'm on drugs. I just don't think it would help.
You don't need drugs.
Not for this film.
Not for this film.
Nope.
Okay, so Lydia, you?
I want listeners to go back to the year 1998. If you weren't born until after that, then feel free to sit this analogy out. But I was in 11th grade drama society, and the 1998 stage production of this musical came out, and I think it was specifically produced so that way they could hold on to the copyright.
Oh, that's always a good way. That's
like, seriously. But I loved it, and mostly it's because it's Cats and it's a musical, and there's a lot of like people just in leotards. So
the makeup, I've never been like on stage productions. I've never been disappointed, even when Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt,
mm-hmm.
Titus Andronicus.
Oh, Titus Andromedon?
Andromedon. Okay, when Titus Andromedon.
Oh, is it the geisha?
No. He gets into the production of Cats. Do you know how you get into Cats?
Oh, yeah. You dress up as a cat, and as the cats are coming into the audience, you pick up and you start like dancing on stage, and you do this weird.
Yourself.
Yeah.
And even in that, knowing that like all half of his outfit's like Twizzlers and twist ties, and like I was still like, that's freaking genius.
It fits so well because in the 98 version, and even in this version, they're like using random objects as like other objects, and it's kind of fun.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I like it. It's the unconventional fashion challenge from Project Runway, which are always the best episodes.
Oh yeah, like when Bob the drag queen like made a dress out of paper, and it was just like, mwah, beautiful,
100%.
Anyways.
So you got into it in 1998.
Right. And I was obsessed with it when I was a teenager. And then eventually I grew up and I was like, you know what? This is a really weird musical. I think I'm just going to stick to Phantom of the Opera, which
is not a bad choice. The movie, not such a great choice, but like the musical's fantastic.
I was trying to make a joke and it was just about as bad as this movie.
Are you saying you don't like Phantom of the Opera?
I do, as like that got me into musicals, but like the one soundtrack that I listened to regularly from my youth was the Les Mis soundtrack. Specifically the 10th anniversary with Colin Wilkinson as Jean Valjean, and fuck Tom Hooper for making the Les Mis movie. Okay, I'm gonna like step off of that soapbox and I'm gonna walk a mile away.
No, bring the passion. The title of this podcast is Shocked and Applaud.
Oh, and I'm shocked by this movie.
And I applaud you for that.
And when the movie came out, I was like, I'm not going to go see this. Because I had a lot of feels, a lot of good feels about the 98 VHS copy that I bought with my own hard-earned money. And I was like, I'm just not going to see this unless we do it for the podcast. And I'm going to be okay if we never do it for the podcast and I just absorb everything through cultural osmosis.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I feel that way about the new Les Mis movie.
Yeah, which you don't have to watch.
I really don't want to.
You don't have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'll watch the PBS special on that one too.
Yay!
Jen, how did you find yourself here?
I have also had sort of a cultural osmosis experience with Cats. I think my mom and my aunt got to see it on stage at the Paramount here in Seattle. And I think that the first time I really got introduced to the songs was in choir class in high school.
Oh,
and
no.
We were doing an Andrew Lloyd Webber compilation song. And two of those were Magical Mr. Mistopheles and Memory. So that was the first time that I really got...
What high school year was that for you?
This would have been 10th grade.
97?
I think, and it was a cabaret night or something like that?
No, it wouldn't have been cabaret night, because cabaret nights tended to be a personal, like, choice that singers would do. It was going to be something that parents actually paid money to go and watch their kids
We made parents pay money to watch some of the worst things I've ever seen.
It's true. But for some reason or another, this song got dropped from what we ended up doing. In fact, I think that the whole night was postponed or maybe canceled. I don't remember exactly the circumstances around that. But really, the first time that I had seen the full production from start to finish was in January, maybe February of 2020, in like the last couple of weeks that this film would have been out in theaters.
I knew nobody would be in the theater.
Because in December, for a movie that came out in December of 2019, it has not aged well at all.
Accurate, Jen. Accurate.
Also, before we go on, I think I would be remiss to everybody in the Decatur Drama Society if I did not mention the parallels of this musical with one of the first stage productions I ever did with the lovely people in this room right now. Do you remember Spoon River Anthology?
Okay, so I was walking out of work yesterday and I stopped to talk to my coworker, Shane, from Shandytown. Follow them on Twitch. But like, I was like, hey, you want to know what we're recording tomorrow? You want to know what movie we're doing? And then we get into talking about theater, as we tend to do. And I was like, okay, so you want to know why I was always cast as like the comedic relief? Was because I got a laugh when we were doing Spoon River Anthology, which is a grouping of monologues about all these dead people. It's terrible. Sorry, you were going to say Spoon River. Woo, what a trip.
It was just like, I feel like it just needs to be said, because how many people back in, from high school are going to be yelling at us if we don't say that?
That we were in that production, that's how we got to know each other. Jen joined shortly thereafter.
For that year. I had been in drama the previous year before you, because we're 1 year apart.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was doing Running Start, which is a very maybe local to Washington thing where high school students can take college classes. And I didn't think I could fit a production in.
You had a job. You were going to college and you were a teenager. That's more than enough.
Yeah.
You're one of like two people I know who earned a free 2-year degree through Running Start.
That's right. I graduated from college a month before I graduated from high school.
It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. My partner is like super, super smart. She's got a job. So she like pays for stuff. And I'm like, she's got a college degree. She's still going to college. It's like a 2-year degree. I'm just a humble little girlfriend. Yeah. I admit I was the worst. Pitch has decided to sleep, but I feel like I want her to run through all the time.
She's like, no, you want me to perform.
I kind of got her high on Kitty Crack before we started recording, and she might be sleeping one off right now.
I've got some fun facts about catnip when we get to that, but we should probably get in there. We got some Sean facts I'm sure to drop before we begin.
Sure. Cats is a 2019 musical fantasy film based on the 1981 Tony Award-winning stage musical of the same name by Andrew Lloyd Webber. It originated as a poetry collection called Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats.
T.S. Eliot, you jerk.
That was published in 1939. During that time, T.S. Eliot was going by the name Old Possum for some of his works. So that is an actual, like, when it's Old Possum's book, that's because T.S. Eliot was going by Old Possum.
Hey, applauders. This is Trash Raccoon here. Welcome to our recording of Review of Cats.
It's just he had to rebrand after, you know, he found out that fascism wasn't actually a hot topic. Sorry, that was going back to the Maggie Mayfish. Did I bring that up? Or was that... okay. So if any of you want to go ahead and go more into T.S. Eliot, watch Maggie Mayfish. She's a YouTuber where she talks about cats and how the Cats movie is pretty much kind of like very much the antithesis of some of the things that T.S. Eliot believed in, because he was kind of like a fascist sympathizer. Also, Cody Johnstone from Some More News actually does the voice of T.S. Eliot in there, and he's glorious. It's wonderful, and everybody should just go watch it.
Yeah, Cody's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's like the Lewis Black of our time.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about box office?
This cannot bode well. They threw so much money at... I mean, like, I get the feeling they threw so much money at this.
Right.
And also, remember that this is pre-real 2020. This was theaters before you couldn't go and see movies in theaters.
Right. This also is, like, kind of a precursor to everything in 2020. Like, this movie was trying to give us a warning of what 2020 was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, it tried real hard.
Yeah, and it just failed.
Cats is the equivalent of Wuhan. It's just the, the birthplace of 2020.
It's the... I don't know how I feel about that, Jen.
Okay, I can take it out.
No, I'm just saying that, like, I feel like since Wuhan was the first place to go into lockdown, like, they're almost unjustifiably criminalized. I mean, like, the Kung Fu flu, like it's just a little racist. Not even just a little, it's a little, but like, But, like, this is kind of like Patient Zero.
Mm-hmm. As far as, like, everything else that kind of came after it. And I wouldn't even say that there were so many bombs, like, culturally or even movie-wise. But it was sort of like, if this was the last movie you watched in theaters before theaters shut down.
It nearly was.
Yeah.
I think I saw one, like, spy film that was unmemorable, but this was, like... Oh, and I might have watched Sonic the Hedgehog.
Another catch
yeah.
fire.
Yeah, I just threw...
Funny, interesting fact about Sonic the Hedgehog. The group that went in and tried to save the digital effects for Cats is the same group that went in and fixed the special effects and the look of Sonic the Hedgehog.
They messed his face up real bad.
Yeah, but that's not because of the people who actually did the original work. It was the people who were making the decision. I'm going to rant about it later because, like, VFX, computer, video game developers, they're kind of on in their industries. And it's like, I'm going to go into a rant about it later.
That's okay.
This movie is the reason that I believe we could not have faked the moon landing. Because this is our current technology. I'm going to have to tell this joke again.
Computer, stop.
Leave it in, Jed. Leave it in because it fits so well with the movie we're doing.
All right. Alexa has tried to remind me that the moon landing actually did happen. If you couldn't hear that in the background.
Now your IPS is like, oh, Jen thinks the moon landing didn't happen. I wonder if she'd be interested in flat earth conspiracies.
It's quite true. So budget-wise, Cats grossed $27.2 million in the U.S. and Canada, $47.4 million in other territories, so worldwide $74.6 million. Production budget of $95 million. So we get, out of like advertising and things like that, we get a net loss of about $113.6 million.
Okay, so what's the net loss again?
After
advertising, it was like $137 million?
Yes, as a loss. So we're looking at a production budget of $95 million mm-hmm. and a box office of $74.6 million. So you'd only really get about $20 million between those, but you also got to consider like advertising and that sort of thing.
Right. So they put like $100 million into advertising, which makes sense with the way that a lot of things are advertised nowadays, and they didn't get any of that back.
Wow.
I don't feel bad about them because, yeah.
I mean, like the people who stood to make a lot of money. I mean, the artists got paid for their work.
The tech crew got paid. The people on the background, they got paid for their work. The only people who lost money were the people who were trying to vie for an Oscar.
Sorry.
Oh, no. You mean that this whole like realistic aspect of a movie that was basically based off of cats singing and dancing ultimately didn't create a net profit for you because you didn't understand the fact that computer graphics don't work the way that you want them to work? I'm sorry, you don't understand the purpose of a right click on a computer.
You seem to have, as you wished, down a hill into a, what do you call a ravine that's unfathomable? Maybe like an uncanny, maybe you fell into an uncanny valley, you guys? Maybe you fell into one of those and you just live there now.
Yeah.
Dumb.
Like, and here's the thing, I don't hate on Tom Hooper at all. He really knows how to transition a scene.
That's not what you yelled like 5 minutes ago.
Was it? Oh, yeah. Because of Les Mis. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. But like, really, I really should take that back. I'm sorry, Tom. I don't mean to go ahead and think that you are a bad director. I really think that you are a good director because I've seen the first two episodes of his Dark Materia. And I think like, even though that's a fantasy property, it's realistic enough to where it fits into your skill set and it fits into your comfort zone. This movie did not fit into your comfort zone. The only reason why you were picked was because of Les Mis like barely gaining an Oscar and Andrew Lloyd Webber and Cameron Mackintosh, which I have a lot of respect for in certain areas, but in this area, I don't think they knew what they were getting themselves into. I think they were trying to like cookie cutter and like I'm just speaking out of my ass the way that this movie was taken out of it. And they took out buttholes too.
Anecdotally, we think that we haven't been able to find any paperwork on it.
Yeah. But it's like you don't have to have an Oscar because it's a very exclusive club and it's a bunch of people who are trying to gain like they're just so rigid in their ideology and they don't really have an understanding of what makes an enjoyable movie, which is all art. It's subjective. I get that.
Yeah, the Oscar machine itself is broken.
Right.
It doesn't speak to the people. And if you truly understand the fandom of a thing, you're more inclined to be able to appreciate that as you change the medium that you're sharing your art through. Like, the reason certain musicals don't translate to film very well is because oftentimes you don't know what to take out and leave in.
Right.
Because who are you talking to?
In this case, I think Cats would have made a better animated musical, but I don't think that was what the Elliott copyright estate was actually vying for. Because, like, in Lindsay Ellis's video about why is Cats... That's literally the title of it. It's another YouTuber that you should go watch. She's more intelligent than me and more articulate than me.
I think that if you share an idea with her, you probably have some parallels. Yeah. Don't you worry about it.
But I don't think that that is what the original copyright holder wanted. This was something that was floated around back in the 90s. Mm. Spielberg was going to do an animated movie musical, and I believe that the estate holder of the original poems shut that down because it's not what T.S. Eliot would have wanted.
He wouldn't have wanted a cartoon of it?
Well, I mean, if he's, like, you know, doing this in the early, like, 1900s, the only real, like, animated movie that he's going to view is probably going to be, like, you know, Steamboat Willie. It's like, there's this idea that animation is just for kids. And as I'm walking in to do this podcast, I see that Naomi and Jen are watching Infinity Train, which is not for kids, has a lot of adult, and, like, it's perfect for, you know, teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's still, like, animation cannot be pigeonholed to just children.
Oh, yeah. The people I know who love animation the most, other than, like, very small children, are much older persons. You can't, like... I contend that if T.S. Eliot had watched a Studio Ghibli film,
mm-hmm.
he'd have been like, you know what? Cat Bus was great. Let's do that again.
Or Beauty and the Beast, the thing that actually was the first animated movie musical that got like an Academy Award, mm-hmm. like fully nominated, fully awarded. And it's the reason why we have the animated movie category in some of those. But like it's still like an arbitrary statue that ultimately doesn't mean anything in a zombie apocalypse. Like, it's not essential is what I'm saying. In the year of our Lord 2021, the Academy Awards are not essential. I don't think that's a hot take.
I think that we live in and we should really eventually get to talking about the movie, but I feel like we are in such a connected culture that you can really find out where your audience is, and people talk with their money now. The Gen Zs, they talk all the time with their money. They're like, this is awesome, throw money at it. Oh, you suck and you're canceled, we're taking all the money away. And it's fantastic. I think that's actually a great evolution of our culture. And so I think since this movie bombed, I think it might have closed the opportunity for other films that might have been equally awesome, or not equally awesome, but even better, because they were like, oh, there's no money here. But they were thinking like big, they were talking different money, mm-hmm. you know? Pitch Kittens getting some more kitty crack.
Yum.
Okay. Okay. So we paid some money for it. We're in it to win it. I've seen it in the theater. So
would either of you like to guess on the worldwide gross of the musical?
I think the emphasis would be on the word gross.
Oh, on the musical? I think it's like in the billions.
On the musical.
Like $4 billion was the last figure that I heard.
How about you, Naomi?
I have no idea. I trust Lydia. $4 billion and $1. $4 billion and $1 because of Price is Right rules.
$1!
Well, Sean Fax only leads us into 2012, but the gross of that was $3.5 billion. So you guys are pretty close. Yeah. And it might even be $4 or $4.1 billion by now, except that, you know, not considering that everything is closed down now.
Probably not after this movie. Sorry. Okay. Anyways.
It's funny that this did not contribute to the mass estate of Cat's Nest.
Yeah. So, okay. First scene, what do we have? We have an opening. It's like it's a moon with clouds and you see a cat face in there and then it goes. It's like very high energy. It's the overture.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a prologue. Right? Prologue for the Jellicle song for Jellicle Cats?
Right. It's like it's fully instrumental. And it, like, even Phantom of the Opera would have had this outside of, like, the actual prologue. It's pretty much the theme of the movie. And you hear it in the Jellicle songs. You hear it throughout the movie. We have, like, it scanned down onto a cityscape. This is where we're going to be taking place for all of our stories.
Yeah, what city is it?
I don't know.
It would have to be London, right?
I mean, I think so.
That makes sense that it's London. Because, like, at one point in Beautiful Ghosts, they actually talk about London. So, it's London.
And all those British accents.
Right.
T.S. Eliot and Andrew Lloyd Webber are both British.
Oh, well then, Britain somewhere.
Yeah.
Probably London. Plus all the streets are really dirty.
Yeah. And they're cobblestone.
And people like to throw away cats.
There's a...
Oh, man.
Also, there's like all of these shadows of the monstrosities. And my note was like, why hide the monstrosities? We already saw it in the trailer. It's all of these like cat, like people like dressed up as cats. It's very similar to the stage production, but it's in a movie that's trying to be realistic. Stepping off of my soapbox.
It's look, get on that soapbox just like that brave little toaster. And you just say the things that you feel in your heart. That's what makes for good podcasting.
Yeah.
So we pan cat pat cast cats. Pat.
Yeah.
We pan past so many different things, including the Egyptian. And my notes at this point say, oh no, scale is already a problem. Nothing's the right size at any of the right times in any of this. I feel like somebody should have been there with a scale.
Going back to our Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, talking about scale, we got scale issues here. They did it good over there. This movie doesn't know what's going on.
No, not at all. Now, I'm sorry to reference my notes as my notes, but now my notes are like, I forgot that this begins with attempted murder.
Oh, yeah. Lady just like throws a bag out into an alleyway and then she gets into her car and she yeets herself out of the movie. And I'm like, yes, get out while you can.
Oh, good. I thought she aimed for the river and missed.
Maybe she did. Yeah. And then like as the overture like picks up, you're like, what is this random thing that is in a bag?
They're all like circling around it and sniffing it. And then random cat whose name I don't know tears it open a little bit. And then all of a sudden this cat pops out and she's like, oh, and they're like, oh, and then
they scatter.
And then my notes are like, okay, the stage direction here was stand there, but more cat. Because whenever they're standing still, I feel like they're told to keep their body at a curve. So they're always kind of like up on the ball of their foot and they're like kind of curved.
Yeah, they're like cocking a hip to the side.
And they're like, oh, and their shoulders are hunched a little bit. And they're like, oh, cat.
So the original musical was kind of this vehicle for dance. Oh, what is her name? I want to say it's Julia Lynn is the original choreographer. I could be wrong about that. I put my phone on airplane mode so nobody would call me. Well, if Sean wants to correct me, then feel free to do that in Shock Talk, which is going to be fun. But Juliette Lynn, I think, was the original choreographer. And like her dance is not supposed to be like a cat, like a hundred, like an equivalent to a cat. It's more to evoke the feeling of a cat in the 98, because I haven't seen the stage production. But like the dance is, in my opinion, is very like fluid, the way that a cat is fluid. Mm. And there's like a lot of like, and then you have like kind of these jerky motions because cats like to sometimes be jerks.
100%. Can vouch. Hey, Pitch, you down? Yeah, kitten face.
Look, we gave her free reign to go throughout this entire podcast, and she's just like, no, I don't want to because you want me to do it now.
Yeah, no, it's 100. Like she's like, oh, remember that one time you were like, you're being too loud, you put me in the bathroom? And like, we stepped away from that. Now we just kind of like leave her alone and she leaves us alone. But like this time we want to engage her. And she's like, I think I'll sit in the windowsill.
I'm just going to lie on the bed.
Just gonna...
Oh, you gave me catnip in a box? Nah.
No, she thoroughly rolled around in it. That's why she's licking herself right now.
Yeah. So, and so this is when we go into the first number, which is Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats. And the cat that you don't know the name of, that's Munko Strap.
Munko Strap?
Munko Strap.
I should write that. I'm not going to write that down.
Don't write it down.
Look,
you can call him Musky.
Is it Musko Cat?
No, it's Munko Strap, but it would be like monkey. And I shortened down all of the Jellicle names.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I only spelled them correctly when they were the title of the song that I was copying off the internet.
Good for you.
Okay, so they're like, Jellicle Cats are something something, and Jellicle Cats are... Okay, I don't know this musical well enough to sing it to you the way that I could sing it to you So Long and Thanks for All the Fish.
Right.
So I just know...
Do you want me to do that since you did it for the last one?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you blind when you're born? Can you see in the dark? Would you look at a king? Could you sit on his throne? I mean, like, the lyrics are relatively good, despite the fact that T.S. Eliot was a fascist sympathizer. I get that. But it's still like, you know, it's like, oh, these are definitely things that are evocative of a cat, you know?
Yes. Like how irreverent they are, ignoring status, mm-hmm. going for the visceral, the tangible, the physically pleasing things that a cat does. At one point, one's like, a Jellicle cat's looking for a rat or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
But he's on top of a toilet. Yeah. And he, like, sticks his head in the toilet. Yeah. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And so all my notes say are like, toilet.
And so this is like a failing that I think the movie does, is it's trying to be so realistic that it allowed the actors to go ahead and record live recording, a live audio of them singing, but they're also doing all of these dances. And so you catch these moments where they're trying to catch their breath as they're singing and dancing, which is normal. Uh-huh. But it's, I don't know, it just kind of takes me out of like the feel of like trying to get into the song. I don't know, maybe it's just a nitpick.
No, I feel like when I, the thing that catches me up on the first song is I'm staring at them, their physical form, because I'm like, oh, we've gotten to the cats. Good job. First 5 minutes, bring on the cats, right? But they've animated the fur on top of these bodies, and I can't help but imagine them all in like green little suits just running around doing, I don't know how they actually did the screen recording, but like they've animated this fur over it, and they've made it perfect, and they've edited out any kind of curve or form to the human body. And so they look too perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And because that perfection translates to actor after actor after actor, it's too much. Like you expect to see a roll. You expect to see something flap out of place. We were watching Pete's Dragon the other day, and to watch somebody struggle with a cape in real life, you're like, yep, that's exactly how a cape do. It's going to be weird, and it's not going to do everything you expect it to, even if it's very well tailored. Mm-hmm. But if you're in charge of every follicle of hair on this fake cat, it's going to look weird.
Yeah, and like I watched it again this morning, and I was like, you know, the Uncanny Valley kind of fits with the mood of the music, because the music is very like surreal, and it kind of reminds me of Mannheim Steamroller, if you remember him from the 90s.
I do not.
Yeah. I had a Christmas album of his, and it's very like, it's like very, reminds me of like 70s funk music, but like with that sort of, what am I trying to say? It's very synthetic. That's what I'll say, because there's a lot of synths in there. And so like I was watching it today. I'm like, Lydia, you really can't be too mad with the movie because of the fact that the music itself is utilizing a lot of synth. And so like the synth, the Uncanny Valley, I was like, okay, maybe I can give this a pass. And then just a musical number comes up and I'm just sort of like, no, kind of takes me out. But I will say, I do like the dancing.
Oh, yeah. I think it's hard to find a lot of fault with the performance overall, mm-hmm. but the things that get you kind of get you super hard. Jen was actually mentioning to the trumpets to me.
The trumpet synth are in there are pretty much 100% probably ripped from the original way that it was performed.
They used synth in the original production?
I would think so. I don't think it was a full, and maybe it was a full orchestra, but the way that those synth trumpets sound, it sounds very reminiscent of early 80s, like something you would get on a Moog synthesizer.
Yeah, I felt a lot of like vibe between this movie's soundtrack and the 98 version. And so the song progresses, as, you know, songs do. And we're introduced to pretty much the audience surrogate, which is the cat who got abandoned. And her name is Victoria.
But we don't learn that until the second song starts, which is now that they've all danced around her. And we've learned that they're all Jellicle cats. And she's all like, what the hell is a Jellicle cat?
Yeah.
And they're like, you want to be one of us. And she's like, I have no idea. Right. They're like, what's... Dude, Munko
Strap.
I really got half of it right.
I think that's his actual name.
Okay, Munko was like, "What's your name?" And she's like,
"Yeah."
He's like, "Everybody's got a name, and that's everybody's got three names."
And that's when we go into the naming of cats.
Song number. Oh, I didn't tell you. This is very stupid. I have rated each song 1 out of 10.
Yay!
Prologue. Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats is a 5 out of 10.
Good. Accurate.
Okay. So naming of cats. How does one get a name? What is your name?
Well, see, there's three names. There's the first name, and that's the name that all of the humans use for the cat. So Pitch's name, that her first name is Pitch. But then there's a second name, and that's a name that is used while cats address other cats. And that's where names like Skimbleshanks or Mr. Mistopheles or Munko Strap come into play. My Jellicle cat name would be McGillicuddy.
That's adorable. I was writing mine down. So my around the house, everybody knows me as Naomi, right? But the cat between cat name is when Jen calls me May.
Oh.
That one feels like a truer name to me. And I assume that's what they are saying.
Yeah.
They all sound like Vogon poetry to me.
Rumble Shanks the Monko Slug.
Come on. You're doing a really good job.
Deuteronomy McGillicuddy.
Oh, Vogon poetry.
Schlibble schlubs, the dripping drops of the corpulent.
I think I would be Snibble Snubs. Or Schnibble Schnubs. With the S-C-H spelling.
Okay, but I can't tell you my secret. What the heck is the third one?
The third one is a name that only the cat themselves know, and they don't utter it to anybody else.
Oh, I utter mine all the time.
Yeah.
When I call myself a dumbass. I'm like, oh, you dumbass.
But here's the thing. It's at this moment in the movie that Victoria is sort of like brought into the fold, so to speak. I mean, like, it's a cult, right?
It's 100% a cult.
Yeah.
And she's in the introductory where they like shower you with a bunch of attention and praise. And then you see how well you can fit in with them before they like truly indoctrinate you.
Right. And she like takes that like that third name and she really stops and thinks about it. And she's like, how do I fit into all of this? And then she has like this really good dance number. Yeah.
She does a little ballerina-esque stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Does she actually say her name? But she wouldn't say, she couldn't say it.
She says it when, like, before the naming of the cats, before, like, she's surrounded by all these people saying, Jellicle songs for Jellicle cats. And then it stops, and that's when McCavity shows up, and he's just sort of like, you know, oh, you're new. I could probably get you on my side because that's what I do. And everybody flees, and that's why she's kind of left alone. And then, like, she runs off to where they are after McCavity leaves. And that's when they're like, no, what's your name? Can you tell us your name? And that's when it goes into like this did not need a plot. Also, in the stage musical, it transitions from Jellicle songs to the naming of cats by breaking the fourth wall. The naming of cats was originally about breaking the fourth wall and talking to the audience and setting the audience down and saying, hey, by the way, this is what all of these names are meaning. This is the importance behind it. Just get on board.
This movie really uses Victoria as the entry point for the audience to become a member of the Jellicle cats.
Right.
Everything is seen through the almost Kirsten Stewart jaw drop of Victoria.
Yeah, okay. If we can talk about fragile, I had a whole note about it later on.
She reminds me of Sprinkles, also known as Little Girl, which is our kind of secondary cat at my grandma's house currently.
She has no teeth. She gums you. She's mad. She's like, nah, 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 nah. It's very cute.
Is she a Gumby cat?
She's got that same kind of coloring. It's kind of white and spotty.
So, okay. This scene has a ton of, I need to up my eyeliner game real bad.
Mm-hmm.
I need a cat eye. If I could wake up to having a cat eye applied to me every day, or if I had the guts to go get eyeball tattooing, which is a whole thing, which terrifies me, but it would be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally would. Oh, okay. So this scene also emphasizes the fact that even when you're a dancer who's very, very slim, like when you move your body in a certain way, if you bend to a certain degree, and they're bendy all the time. A whole movie, they're just bendy, bendy, bendy.
Right.
They've smoothed out the rolls that would appear.
Mm-hmm.
Even on a very thin person, if you're at 90 degrees, you're going to have like rolls and it's not going to be necessarily covered by fur. I mean, look at this cat sleeping right here.
Well, and a dancer's body isn't naturally skinny in the same way that like Hollywood likes to perceive most women's bodies are skinny.
Right.
So it's one of those things where they have a lot of muscle on them, which, you know, adds that definition. And like you probably are going to get some rolls because in order to build up that muscle, you have to actually eat calories. I know it's a dirty word. So that's what I took away is that like all of the actors pretty much have very similar bodies. I mean, the male dancers are more like defined muscular wise, but the female dancers are like more, you can definitely tell that they have an extra layer of fat because that's how women's bodies. Sorry.
Yeah. How are you going to have a baby without extra nutrients?
Right.
I would say Taylor Swift is the only one that has any kind of sense of femininity above the waist.
And they got booby bumps.
Yeah,
except for Victoria. Nearly every female cat has booby bumps.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she shakes hers in her song. Yeah. So.
She definitely draws attention to it. Yes.
Yes. And a couple of the male actors have pecs that are emphasized a little bit more in their form, but like neither male nor female cats really have them.
Yeah.
If you're going to go all out and add upper pectorals, shouldn't it be like six pecs.
Just quote me some Danny John Jules, Jen, if you're going to do it.
I mean,
quote
if they're
me
going...
some Danny John Jules.
Okay, so Danny John Jules has performed in Cats before.
He's,
so that's number one.
He was the cat from Red Dwarf.
Yes!
And also...
I'm so excited. All six of my nipples are tingling.
That's one of my favorite lines of Red Dwarf ever. Danny John Jules says amazing things in that show.
Let's go back to the realism factor that everybody was trying for this movie that ultimately failed. Where are our six-nippled and six-pecked cats? I see Pitch, and she looks very offended
she
right
sat
now.
Up, she's like, how dare you talk about my body? Okay, so I rated the naming of cats 3 out of 10.
Nice.
My ratings will make you mad eventually, so just so you know.
Moving on to the next one. Victoria is brought into... Okay, so pretty much Victoria is told the plot of the movie, which is that there's a bunch of cats that are trying to get chosen at this Jellicle Ball.
Yes, this is the third song, so it's called Invitation to the Jellicle Ball.
Right, and so she's pretty much told that there's all of these cats that want to go ahead and go to the Heaviside Lair so they can get reborn. And one of the cats that is going in, is trying for it, is Jenny Anydots, the old Gumby cat, played by Rebel Wilson.
Okay, wait, are we going on to that one? Because, okay, so I rated, I have to rate them all.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them. I rated Invitation to the Jellicle Ball. And this is probably strictly because this is our first real introduction to Mr. Mistopheles. A solid 3 out of 10.
Yeah, because doesn't he like make that?
He lays on a tombstone with roses in his arms, and I'm like, that is my mood.
He is a klutz in this movie, where in the 98 version, he was a bit more like put together.
Oh, yeah. He's every really well put together gay man I've ever had a crush on.
Yeah.
Sorry. I can't help myself.
Yeah.
Like, David Levy exists and I am here for it.
Okay. So after the invitation to the Jellicle Ball, we come in to Jenny Anydots.
Yes, this is the fourth song. I did not number the songs, so we're in trouble. But this is I can count up to four, and this is the fourth song called The Old Gumby Cat.
Do any of the performances of the cats actually remind you of a cat? Because I felt like it was... Like, I don't know. Like, that was my note. And, like, after watching it three times, I'm like, I mean, if I get at, like, a mile distance and I squint really hard, then...
Yeah, it's people, like, picking whatever it is their favorite thing about a cat and then, like, playing with it. And I get that. I don't mind an anthropomorphized animal because it's one of the things me and Jen first ever bonded over was, like, speaking for animals and assuming their narrative, which is probably not, like, socially correct, but, like, just, like, making them more human.
Right.
Relates us to him better. I remember, like, Jen's old dog, Bo, like, we would talk for him all the time. That's how I knew that we might actually get along beyond, like, the first month. I was like, I talk for my animals, too. And, like, and so it's all of these people who, they do, I mean, with what they've been given and the restrictions that they have, they do some pretty good stuff. And we're introduced to Jenny Anydots, and that's Rebel Wilson. And she's got a solid sense of humor. And you can tell that they've kind of throttled her, which kind of bites. But of all the bits in this film, that's the one that's most appropriate for her. And like they come into the there, she's like Victoria's like, well, I don't know if she says this, but they're, oh, I think Munko, he's like, let me show you one of the cats who's auditioning for the Heaviside deal at the Jellicle Ball. And they're like, he's like Jenny Anydots, and they go into the window, and she's like on her back itching her crotch.
And like in the 98, she's so much more dignified. She is like lounging about, but so much more dignified. And I mean, do you want me to sing this song?
I mean, you can do it.
I have a Gumby cat in mind. Her name is Jenny Anydots. Her coat is of a tabby kind, with tiger stripes and leopard spots.
It's great.
Thank you.
Okay.
I really liked this musical when I was a teenager.
Well, okay, so they talk about how this... Okay, so Rebel's whole reason for wanting to get a new life, which is awarded at the Jellicle Ball, is that she's sick of staying in the same room all the time, and she can only cause so much havoc there. So she's training all these mice to do little musical numbers.
Yeah.
And they are the scary... They've taken children. They've put bald caps on them.
And then she talks about eating them later, and I'm like, what? good.
Which I think fails in comparison when she's like, I've even told the cockroaches a tattoo. And a tattoo is like a tippity-tappity-tippity-tap. Yeah. It's like a, it might even be a military term for the way that persons march. But like she has all these cockroaches march out and they only do like a couple close-ups of their faces and their weird human faces and their cockroach outfits. And then she eats one. And I was like, what? And then they've got tons of cockroaches. And then they eat a whole bunch more. And she does all of this like, Rebel does all these really funny like physical humor things. And throughout the her part of this film, she does some pretty funny jokes. But like, it's like also fitting in this big constraint.
My note with all of the comedy in this number was painful. It's just painful comedy. And I'm like I'm trying to think of a time when I thought Rebel Wilson was funny. And maybe I just haven't seen a lot in her, a lot of things that she was in. So I'm like trying to, you know, think about like, okay, so did I see Pitch Perfect? No, I didn't see Pitch Perfect.
That's where Pitch got her name, by the way. Aww. It's not because she's black.
Yeah.
Well, kind of because she's black. I texted Jen. I was like, hey, my coworker has a cat, a little black cat. I think I'm ready to get a cat now. You ready? Also, the girls want to go see Pitch Perfect too tonight. And Jen's like, fine. If we could name the cat Pitch. It was very cute.
Yeah.
Okay, so, but, yeah. Sorry.
But I don't know. It's just like, it felt very painful.
When she unzipped her skin and revealed her sparkly outfit underneath, you were not like...
Hot? No, it wasn't hot.
No, I don't think it was hot, but I was like, okay, that was...
That okay, so in the 98 version, okay, I'm going to be going back to it. It is my... This is in the novel.
Do it. No apologies,
In the 98 stage musical, they actually do that, where Jenny Anydots is just kind of tramping around. She's got this, like, comfy fur coat that's on, and then they, like, take it off, and she's, like, doing this tap dancing routine with all of the other cats dressed up as, like, cockroaches. It's adorable. It is absolutely adorable. And like, instead we get monstrosities.
But my issue is that like when she's like on the windowsill and she rolls over or whatever, and she leans on a loaf of bread. And I don't know about you, but a loaf of bread to me is probably 20% smaller than a cat, right? This thing is a fourth of her size. And I'm like, what? What are you doing? But I will rate this song.
Yes.
Okay, I will caveat this, that in terms of like sing-along ability, standalone watchability, the fact that Rebel shows up and she's the first really funny thing to me, 7 out of 10.
Okay, so this would be the fifth song, I believe?
Yes.
Yeah, and this is the Rum Tum Tugger.
Before we get into that, I just have one quick Sean fact, which will introduce us into another Sean fact later. But Dame Judi Dench in the original 1981 production of Cats was two characters, and one of those characters was Jenny Anydots.
Oh, so it's like full circle.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very cute. What can't she do?
So, but we're not at that part just yet. So we will talk about Dame Judi Dench when Old Deuteronomy comes around. But we're not at that song. We're at number 5, the Rum Tum Tugger.
Okay, so this guy, he's on the mantle. This cat's on the mantle, and he's like, hey, Jenny Anydots. Okay, so... unless I'm directly quoting, this is just me making up the narrative that I wish was there.
Yeah.
Hey, Jenny Anydots, your style, it's a thing, but I think I could put some more pizzazz on it. And then he like jumps out the window or whatever. And
well, he jumps on the table and that's when the song begins. And she's just like, I think at one point she says, look at what the crack, look at what the crack dragged in. Look at what the cat dragged in. And I'm like, painful pun. Yeah. Like, I love a good bad pun. I love a bad, bad pun. Yeah. This is neither. This is just like painful.
Yeah, it feels like something the producer heard and was like, we should use more cat turn of phrases. And Rebel's like, I'll give it to you because you already signed the check. But like,
okay,
I could come up with something way better.
She probably could.
Yeah.
It feels very forced on her end. So like, yeah, I don't think it was her first choice.
Yep. Yeah. So he's wearing a fish necklace, got a fish bones necklace,
a fur coat.
I think visually he might be my second favorite cat because he's very pretty man. Very, very pretty man.
Yeah.
Dances around. He's got the most, have you noticed? He's got the most perfect teeth I've ever seen in the whole of my life.
Yeah.
Just like, I have no really good words for it except that chalk is growing out of his mouth.
Jen raises her hand and asks a question. Did anyone notice that they did not digitally enhance the teeth of anything?
Oh, I just noticed. I've noticed his teeth before, but like I didn't think to look at anybody else's teeth. Everybody else's teeth is just their teeth?
Pretty sure they're all flat teeth.
Look, they had a lot of other things that they had to digitally put in there.
They were probably like, okay, gather around. how much singing is in this movie? Okay, does that mean mouths are moving? Does that mean we have to go in and zoom and enhance like CSI and
ew,
go in and
that sounds gross
and squinch and pull down all of everybody's orchestrated singing together? And somebody was probably like, no, let's keep that as is.
Yeah.
Like Slarty Bartfast just being like, okay, as is. Let's go ahead. New world going.
Yeah.
Do you see? Okay, so his whole deal is he's talking about how he's just very contradictory. And in terms of catitude, this is me.
Yeah.
If you tell me I get it one way, I'm going to want it the other way. And that's the thing. Like, you want to go out? No, I want to stay in. You want to stay in? No. I want to go out. You wanted milk? No. You wanted chicken? No. I have this contrary nature, and it's not, just in terms of like my own desires, I'm like, you want me to want it that way.
Yeah.
I'm going to instantly not want it that way.
It sounds very much like a lot of cats I know.
Yeah. I think T.S. Eliot was right on the nose with this one.
I automatically thought of Abe's cat, Benny. Every time I listen to this, I'm like, yeah, that's a Bendigo.
Yeah, 100% on that eye. Yeah, for real. The milk bar.
Oh, yeah. That was like, okay, again, shocked and applaud PSA. Don't give your cats milk.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not good for them. They're lactose intolerant. Mm-hmm. Focus on your proteins.
Yeah.
Lactose.
I will say I like the dancing. Like, there's a lot of moments where I can barely see the dancing in this movie. But I'm still like, when I can see the dancing, I absolutely love it. And like the performers, like they did a great job, not just with what they were given. I feel like they went above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Like I will rage against the people at the top of this movie making the decisions. But I will say that the people who are actually doing the work, I think they're doing phenomenal.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They get nothing but praise.
Yeah. It's full energy performances the entire way through. Yeah. When he's dancing on the milk bar, he pulls Victoria up or like leads her up with like her chin or something. And he's just like wooing her with this vocalization that is very impressive and very Derulo. Mm-hmm. Right. But like, and then he like drops her and I was like, that's amazing.
Well, and he does that. That's not the first time he does it. That's the second time he does it. It's outside of the milk bar, which I kept focusing on the feet in this movie for some reason. Like the feet don't always touch it, but there's a couple of instances where there's just emphasis on the camera focused on a foot, and one of them is during this movie where like she's like doing her ballet move and like he's singing into her foot.
Yeah,
and then
she lifts her leg up and he's holding her foot, and I'm like, my notes literally say he has a foot thing. not gonna be mad at you about it. Everybody gets their thing.
Yeah, but like there's also another instance later on where there's like a foot just right at the camera, and I'm like, are you trying to tell me something? I don't know. I think it's just like dancing, and they're trying to like, there's a lot of like, you know, footwork and there's a lot of like extension of legs and everything. But it makes sense that Jason Derulo would go ahead and play this part, because Rum Tum Tugger is kind of like, he's treated even in the original 98 stage production as like kind of like a New Kids on the Block, NSYNC, Backstreet Boys. Yeah.
I think he's definitely a player type, like a Tomcat.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess Tom Tugger, whatever. This song is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
6 out of 10.
Yeah.
And then they're in the alley, and he turns around, and then he sees somebody, and he's like, kiss! And I get so mad, because I'm like, I love a rogue, like a rough rogue type, right? He's all like, rude. And I don't do rude. You can be rough. You can be roguish, rakish even.
Right.
But like,
don't be rude.
I don't like rude. Don't like it.
Right. And he's hissing at Grizabella, the glamour cat, played by Jennifer Hudson.
Hmm.
Yeah. And she starts singing about herself. Like,
well, those other cats start singing to her about her.
Like, that's halfway through. Like, she starts with remark the cat who hesitates towards you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and like you see the corner of her coat torn and stained with sand. You see the corner of her eye twitch like a crooked pin.
Yeah.
And then like that's when they come in and they start singing, she haunted many a low resort on the grimy road of Tognum Court.
Tognum Court.
Tugnum Court.
I don't know. I don't know either. But
I'm not from London.
These three cats come out, and here's where I wrote down, these cats be bitches.
You've now concluded part one of our review of 2019's Cats a Plotter. Thank you for joining us for our discussion of what has been described by the Boston Globe as having moments they would gladly pay to unsee. Looking for some shows that also discuss music in movies? That Song from That Movie just released an episode discussing the songs of Pinocchio. And Even the Score podcast recently released an episode covering the blaxploitation genre. Check out this episode's description for links to these episodes. Hey, this is your audio engineer and Red Dot Reddit trader, Jenny Money Dots. Did you know that I'm an official Patreon applauder of Shocked and Applaud? For only a dollar per month, I can enjoy the unbleeped episodes that aren't available on our regular feed, as well as support a woman-owned venture that has always been commercial-free. For only a dollar per month, you can do the same. Search for Shocked and Applaud on Patreon, or click the heart icon at the top of shockedandapplaud.com. We've still got plenty of laughs to milk out of this dumpster fire, and we'll be back in 1 week for part two. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.